בוקר טוב, וורלד. Ready to go. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Yerushalayim, Irak Kodesh, daf Kuf Yud Zayin. We're holding at the Halak and Mishnah on Kuf Tet Vav, Amud Beis, right at the bottom. So, we're moving on now to discuss things that we raised, the issue about Chelev, an issue about Dam, and the question of how they relate to Basar v'Cholav. Now we want to talk about those issues themselves. So, Chomer b'Chelev mi'b'Dam, v'Chomer b'Dam mi'b'Chelev. Now, if you take a look at the overall structure of these halachas, even though it's fascinating, they're both mamish from the same pasuk, Kol Chelev v'Chol Dam lo tochelev. Nonetheless, it turns out that there are differences in the chumra of both of them. Because in one sense, we find that chomer b'chelev, that chelev, since if it is kodesh, you would be moyal on the chelev, because, I mean, that's, remember that me'ila is a function of kodshei Hashem. And the chelev, the part that's put on the mizbeach itself, is by definition a kodshei Hashem. As a matter of fact, that chelev is even going to be a chiyav of me'ila for misusing hegdesh, even if it's kodshim kalim. Now, normally, kodshim kalim are not considered to be kodshei Hashem because they also go to the baalim. The owners eat kodshim kalim. Therefore, there's no me'ila on that. However, the chelek of the mizbeach, which is here we're talking about the chelev, that part is considered to be kodshei Hashem once it's right for the mizbeach. And therefore, there is me'ilah across the board on the dinim of chelev, which means that there could also be another three issues that are related to hegdesh. And that would be the chiyuv of pigel. And you remember, of course, the dinim of pigel from Zvachim, in which if someone who was being either any of the four avodas, so he did the shechita, the kabbalah, the halacha, or the actual zrika with the machshava of chutz lizmana, which would be a chiyav of kores, or chutz lemekomo, which would be a chiyav of alav, of malchus. So you could be chayav for that on nosar. You would be chayav if it was left pigel. You would be chayav if it was nosar, if it was left over the period in which it's mutter la'achila, and you'd be chayav on that. And if it is tame, or you are tame, you would be over on the iser d'oraisa of achilas chelev of muktashe betuma. So, none of this, however, would be true about dam. And the dam, even of kodesh, which was supposed to be put on the mizbeach, and you'd think that would be the full equivalent of the chelev that's supposed to be put on the mizbeach, is not true. And not one of those four issues, and let's just remember the four issues, mi'ila, pigel, noser, and tame. Those are hegdish-oriented issues, mi'ila, pigel, noser, and tame. None of that would apply to dam. And yet, we're going to see why. Each one, we're going to have a special mikar for why it's not true. And on the other hand, there is a chumra on dam, because, of course, there's no din of chelev at all on things that are not shayach to the mizbeach. There's no din of chelev when it comes to a chaya. You're allowed to eat the chelev of a chaya. You're allowed to eat the chelev of the oaf. So dam, however, is noyeg bebehema and chayev of, and it doesn't matter whether it's kosher or not, bein tmeim or bein tehorim. Masha enkein, chelev is not noheg on chayot at all, because they're not things that are brought onto the mizbeach, and therefore it's dafka, it says in the pasuk, kol chelev min habehema sheyakriv mimeno yishel Hashem. So therefore, only those things which are, of course, the special shor kesev va'eis. That's the only thing that you would be chayav on, and nothing else. So how do we know that me'ila is true across the board when it comes to chelev? How do we know that chelev, even on kodshim kalim, would still be me'ila, even though you would think that kodshim kalim are not considered to be kodshei Hashem, which is a fundamental property of anything which is chayiv in me'ila? So we know how to Omar Rabbi Yanai. Look, we have a very strange pasuk that comes right at the beginning of the Karbanos. And it's talking about, you'll recall, we open up the parsha of the Karbanos with the Karban of the Kohen Gadol, who made a mistake in Hora'ah, and he was Chorpe. So that is the Par Kohen Mashiach. That Par Kohen Mashiach, the Pasuk talks about every last thing that you have to bring. It says, Ve'et kol chelev parachatat yarimi menu. And it explains what that chelev is. Et ha-chelev ha-machaseh ala kerev. Ve'et kol ha-chelev asher ala kerev. Ve'et shtei ha-klayot ve'et ha-chelev asher alayhen. It just goes on to explain every last bit of chelev. And then it throws in the crazy words, Ka'asher yura mishar zevach ha-shelomim. Oh my gosh. There's nothing that is added with this shlamim, and yet somehow or other the Torah finds it important to add, and all the things that you would take from the zevach shlamim. So, v'chimalamad mishra zevach shlamim. We didn't learn anything from that. We already know everything. So, therefore, it's clear that me'ata arei zebala lamed v'nimtza lamed. It sounds like in the Pasuk, yes, everything that you did there apply here. Well, that makes no sense. So what it's actually saying is the opposite, that everything that you learn here apply there. So it's actually seems to be coming to tell you something new about the Kohen Mashiach, and in actuality, it tells you something new about the Din of Shlomim, Nimtza Lomed. It's a hekesh. And it's Makish Shor Zevach HaShlamim, Lepar Kohen Mashiach, to tell me that just like the Par Kohen Mashiach, which is Kachet Kachim, and therefore is Kulay Miyuchad LaHashem, and it's Kulay Chayev B'Me'ila, so too there's a din of Me'ila on the Shor Zevach HaShlamim, Yeshbo Me'ila, even though it's Kachim Kalim. And even though it starts off without any Me'ila, there's no Me'ila while it's not Kodesh Hashem. But the moment that you go ahead and you do the Zrikas Adam, and now the Murim Aruim L'Mizbeach, it becomes those pieces, which are the Chelev, of course, are considered to be Kodesh Hashem. That is the basis, says Rabbi Yonai, of the Din in the Mishnah, that there is Me'ila across the board on Chelev. Amale Rabbi Chanina, again to Rabbi Yonai. Why are we always looking in this generation to make your own mark on things and tell me something that I didn't know? Come on, man. Ke'ura zu shishana Rebbe. Rebbe taught us this, and it was such a beautiful drosha, and well, all of a sudden it's not pretty enough for you. I mean, Yamai's got to come up with his own approach. What's wrong with what Rebbe taught us? He said, it says beferish in the pasuk, something that makes no sense. V'yiktirama kohena mizbecha lechem isher reach b'choach, etc. Kol chelev l'Hashem. What is that supposed to mean? Of course, kol chelev l'Hashem. What does that add? Aha! That's coming to tell me that even the chelev of kachim kalim needs to be seen as if it's kachay Hashem, because all chelev goes to Hashem. That's the whole point. And that is l'rabot de mure kachim kalim l'me'ila. So it's from there that we could have learned exactly what the Mishnah tells us. There is a chiyav of me'ila on all chelev. So why did Rabbi Yonai have to bring his new pshat that compares it to the Par Kohen Mashiach? Much more complicated. What Rebbe said is straightforward. It's a din in chelev proper. Doesn't require learning from anywhere else. I'd explain that. I'm Rabbi, I'll tell you very simply. Rabbi Yonai is absolutely essential. Because if we only had Rebbe's pasuk, kol chelev l'Hashem, I would have said, yes, read that pasuk carefully. And what does it say? Kol chelev l'Hashem. But are the emurim of kachim kalim entirely chelev? No. I mean, you're not going to tell me that the yotera et hakaved, which is the diaphragm, is that chelev? No. Are the entire shtei aklayot, are they chelev? No. But they're brought from Me'ila. So how would I know? They're brought on the Mizbeach. And they are chayav me'ila, but how do I know that? If I only had Rebbe's pasuk, I would have said, look, it says chaylev, and it means chaylev. And that means the emurim of the yoteret and the klayot, they're not included. That's why I need to know the hekesh. Kasher Yuram Mishor Zevach HaShelamim. Well, you do take the Yoteret Shtei HaKloyot, and it's comparing it to the Yoteret Shtei HaKloyot of the Parkoy Mashiach. To tell me that just like the Parkoy Mashiach is Mi'il, because it's Kachin, from the start, even before you do the Zrikas Adam, so too, the Kachim Kalim, once you do Zrikas Adam and it's right for the Mizbeach, you are Chayv Me'ila. Now, on the other hand, let's say we only had Rabbi Yonai's Drasha. Let's say we only had the Hekesh between the Kachim Kalim of Ashlomim and the Kachim of the Parkoy Mashiach. So I would have said, okay, only those things, Kasher Yuram, Mishar Zevach HaShelamim, I would have said, well, you're not going to be able to learn from this Hekesh, the din of the Chelev of the Aliyah. You can't learn the Halacha of Me'ila on the Chalev HaAliyah Tmima. You can't you learn that from the Parkoy Mashiach, can you? Why not? Because it doesn't have an aliyah. That's why not. The Shor Zevach HaShlamim can be a Rachel. Rachel has a beautiful, nice, fat tail. But a Shor doesn't have a fat tail, and there's no Chelev on the aliyah. So I would say, okay. So since the Torah compared it specifically to the Shor of the Parkoy and Godol, apparently the only parts of the Emurim that I'm chayav on for me, you are those things which appear by the Parkoy Mashiach. And since there is no Aliyah there, there's no Me'ila on the Chelev HaAliyah. That's why I needed Rebbe's pasuk of Kol Chelev to include even the Chelev HaAliyah Tmima. And therefore now I know the whole deal. So I need to know not only the Chelev, but also the Emurim. And I need to know even the chelev of an aliyah that doesn't appear by the Kohen. So you both sukim. Omar le Rav Mori le Rav Zvid, I don't understand why we would not know the aliyah. I mean, look, make up your mind. If the aliyah is, you're calling it the chelev ha'aliyah, okay? So if that means it's part of what's chelev, so then how is it that we don't aser it to eat? It says, kol chelev v'chol dam. So, I mean, that means you're not allowed to eat the chelev ha'aliyah, but everybody knows that the aliyah is completely kosher if it's not a behemas hegdesh. So how could you eat chelev? Omar leis, Rav Zvid said to Rav Mori, to make sure that no one makes that mistake, the Torah wrote specifically, alecha omar kro, kol chelev shor chesev va'ez. Why do you think that it has to repeat specifically shor v'chesev va'ez? That's to tell me only the chelev that is to be found in a shor and a chesev va'ez is lo tochelu. But if it's not found in shor chesev va'ez, and of course the chelev ha'aliyah is only found in the chesev, and it doesn't really appear at all in the shor, it doesn't have a din of aliyah in the a's, there's no din of chelev. Perfect. Rav Ashi Amar, I'll tell you why you're allowed to eat the chelev of the aliyah. It's because every time that the Torah talks about the chelev of the aliyah, it always calls it chelev ha'aliyah. Chelbo ha'aliyah. Well, why does it have to say specifically? Why does it have to call it as if it's a different category? So that shows you that it isn't ever referred to as just chelev. It's always added as an extra category. And since the pasuk says, kol chelev chol dam lo tochelu, and this is not called kol chelev, so it's not included in the Yitzhar Achila of normal chelev. Well, I don't understand. So then we're back where we started from. If Rav Ashi is right, then there shouldn't be Me'ila either. Because remember, the same lashon over there, kol chelev l'ashem, it didn't say kol chelev v'chelev aliyah. And you're telling me that chelev, when it says kol chelev lo tochelu, does not include the aliyah. So why, when it says kol chelev l'ashem, doesn't include the aliyah? You can't have it both ways. You're right. We should go back, understand things the way Rav Zvid understood it, originally with the beautiful drasha of only chelev of shor, kesev, va'ez that appears in all three species. Those are the only ones that you're not allowed to eat. Then the Mishnah said that four things that do appear when it comes to chelev, and again, those four things are mi'ila, pigel, notar, and tameh. So a total of four dinim that appear by chelev that do not apply to dam. How do we know that? Vashein king b'dam, minoan emile. Omar hula, well, there's going to be one pasuk here that has in it three words that all imply that it doesn't apply to dam. And different shittas are going to be dorish different words. In the end, the Gemara is going to say, okay, but that gives us a total of three words. What do we use all three words for? But first, we're just going to talk about why there's no mi'ila. So Amar Ula, well, it says in the pasuk, and what this pasuk has four different in it. Ki nefesh habasar badamhu, ve'anina tativ lachem. So that's one issue. I gave it to you. That means it's yours to use. Ala mizbeach lechapera nafshatechem. So that's an additional drasha. It's yours for kapora, not for purposes of being chayev on things. And this would be ki hadam hu benefesh lechaper. That word hu means that there's no change in the status of dam from before or after there was a zrika. And we'll see why that is significant in terms of these chiyuvim. So let's go through the different shitas that learn each from one of those words. Omar Ula, in order of the pasuk, Anina tativ lachem. Lachem means I'm giving it to you. And that means, how can you call this Kachi Hashem if the Torah says I'm giving it to you? So then it's not Kachi Hashem. So it specifically is telling you, no me'ila, the way Rabbi Shmuel says. And then it goes on to say, Anina tativ lachem lechaper al nafshotechem. That means lechapara netativ. I gave it to you so that you should get a kapora. I didn't give it to you to become chayev amor isurim. And therefore, it's only lechapara velo lemi'ila. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Omar Kro, Kadam hu vanefesh yechaper, that teaches us that there's no change in the status of dam. Because remember, any existential word, hu, of course, being a prime example, it is. Well, that means it is what it is. And therefore, hu is no change. It's always the same. Lifnei kapara, kila'acher kapara. Just like after you did the zrika on the dam, there cannot be me'ila. So too, lifnei kapara, there cannot be me'ila. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Maybe we should say just the opposite. Maybe we should say, just like before you did the Aveda, it is chayev me'ila. The same thing should be true, that even afterwards there is me'ila. Maybe that's what it means. So why not say the opposite? Ve'ema hu, you're right, 100%. It says adam hu, no change. Okay. So that means, even though it's a given, that before you did the mitzvah of it, there was kachay asher, an isra me'ila. Normally, after your yotzei the mitzvah, so now there's no longer any chiyuv. Comes along the pasuk to tell me, who, even li'achar kapara, there will still be an isra me'ila. Maybe that's what it means. So ve'ema hu li'achar kapara, kilifnei kapara. Ma lifnei kapara yeshbo me'ila. Maybe it means we never lose the mi'ila that was there initially. Nah, that doesn't make any sense. There's no place in Kol HaTorah Kula that you do something, the mitzvah is over, and now the Torah is going to tell you there's an Isser Me'ila. That makes no sense. I mean, it's finished, it's finished. I mean, usually what we do afterwards, you know, throw it in the garbage if it's not meant to be. Put it into the Alma if it was Kodesh, and so on. So how could it still have a Chiyuv of Me'ila? Ein lecha davar shenaseh mitzvato ba'alim bo. Well, that's quite an assertion. Is that true, Velo? How about if I show you some examples of things where you did the mitzvah and there's still mehila? Classic. How about Trumat HaDeshen? What's Trumat HaDeshen? You have ashes on the Mizbeach. The korban has already been brought. It's been burned to a crisp. Now all that you have is ash. Well, the mitzvah is over, and therefore there's no me'ila, right? Well, I got news for you. The Torah says you take a shovel full of the ashes. Yeah, what do? Throw them in the garbage? No. You put them right down next to the kevesh, remember? And they are absorbed right there into the ground. And it has to be v'davka v'samo etzal ha-mizbeach. You have to put it there as part of an avodah. That means that it needs gniza. It needs to be buried because it's still going to be chayav me'ila. How is that? I mean, it's nothing but ashes, and therefore it shouldn't be any chiyuvim on it. And over there, Ari Trumat HaDeshen d'na'aseh mitzvato. Nonetheless, we're mo'alim bo. How do I know? Because it's v'samo. Make sure that you put it there in that place that's not taken away from there. That implies an isra'ano. So how do you explain that? I explain it by agreeing with you. You're right. That is an excellent example of something that's na'aseh mitzvaseh and nonetheless has a chiyuv of me'ila. But that's precisely why here it wouldn't be true. Because there are two such examples, and since there are two such examples, ain no on them. What's the other example? The big day kuhuna. What happens to the Kohen Godos begodim on Yom Kippur? So, it says in the pasuk that he has to go, and we remember that there's a special pasuk of what he does. He goes back, Uba Aharon el Ol Moed, Upashat et bigdei abada shelavash bebo'el hakodesh, and dig this, v'hini chumsham. He needs to leave them there. And what does that mean? It's the same language as the Trumas HaDeshen. V'samo etzom izbeach. You have to leave it there. It's over here. It means he has to leave it there because, what's wrong? You did the whole Aveda. The day is finished. So why do I have to now leave them there to make sure that there's nobody that's going to be Nishal Nisuriyana? I don't understand. Gniza? What for? Must be that this is another unique case. Put the two together, Trumat HaDeshen and Big Day Kahuna, and you have two psukim that are giving you two special cases. Wherever you have two special cases, it means that these are unique cases, and you can't learn from them to anything else. So the very fact that you've brought me such a lovely example is the reason why we cannot be Dorish, the Pasuk of the Dam, to mean that you would still be Chayav HaMe'ila even Le'achar Kapora, because the two cases of Big Day Kahuna and Yom HaKippurim and Trumas HaDeshen disprove such an idea, and therefore we learn it the other way. The same way there is no Kapora, that's no Me'ila, that's a given. After Kapora, so too there's no Me'ila Lifnei Kapora. So shneik shuvim aboim ke'echad, v'chol shneik tuvim aboim ke'echad, ein melamdim. Well, I mean, that's a nice sort of cliched answer, and I'll give you my cliché response. It's all very nice according to the Rabbanan who say that that's the next problem. No cliché. First, a problem. The fact that v'hinicham sham means that they're not allowed to be used and therefore there would be a chiyuv of me'ila is a machloket. So it's only true according to the Rabbanan who say that v'hinicham sham means that they're not usable and that they actually are te'unim geniza. But what about according to Rabbi Dosa? Rabbi Dosa says it doesn't mean v'hinicham sham to be gonez then. It means the Kohen Gadol is not to use them next Yom Kippur, which is the next time that they would be suitable for him because they're big day lavan and they're not usable during the year. So v'nicham sham tells me that he is not, according to Rabbi Yossi, he is not to use them. I said Rabbi Yossi, I mean Rabbi Dosa. I'm telling you, I'm getting really confused. Anyway, but according to Rabbi Dosa, who says all it means is he is not allowed to use them next Yom Kippur. He's got to get himself a brand new pair of Big Day Kahuna. That doesn't mean they're not kosher bidekuna. A kohen hetyot could use them during the year because there are babagadim that are similar to the big day kohen hetyot. And therefore, all it means is, according to Rabbi Doisa, shelo yishtamesh b'yom kippurim acher. So then it doesn't say anything about geniza. And therefore, we only have one example of mi'ila la'acher kapora, and that is Trumas HaDeshan. So why can't the dam be the same thing as the Trumas HaDeshan? It's a me'ila la'acher kapora. Michael Amamer, what are you going to say then? Well, I'll bring you another example, which will make it two. We've got the Trumas HaDeshan, true, but we also have Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa, what's the din? You have to leave the egg once it comes down into the Nachal Eitan, even if you finish doing the Aveda, so to speak, the Chiyuvim that you do on the Egla Rufa to be Bechaper on the Dam, V'nikaper lehem Adam, that requires leaving there in the Nachal Eitan, and you're not allowed to be Nene from it. Why? Isn't it after the mitzvah is done? So that means we've got yet another model. We have Egla Rufa, put Egla Rufa together with Trumas HaDeshan, and you've got Shnei Ketuvim HaBoim Ke'echad, V'chol Shnei Ketuvim HaBoim Ke'echad Ein Melamde. Now here's where I had skipped to inadvertently, and now we're up to our cliche, where we always ask, this is only true according to the Mandi Amar who holds Shnei Ketuvim HaBoim Ke'echad Ein Melamdeim. But what about according to the Shita that Alamanti Omar, Shnei Ketuvim HaBoim Ke'echad, Kein Melamdim? So what about over here? Why would we not be Melamed, Michael Amemar? And we have an answer to that that's often applied, that where we have another reason, namely a specific miut, then we don't use our Shnei Ketuvim as models, we use them as anti-models. So if the Pusik tells us in both cases, Trei Miut takes of it, it doesn't say Visam, it says Visamo Etz HaMizbeach. It doesn't say Egla Arufa, it says Ha Arufa. That means that these are unique cases, and the Pusik itself is telling me, don't use me as a model. So therefore, you're left with the fact that Adaraba, if anything, the Pusik is stressing the uniqueness of these two cases of Egla Rufa and of the Trumas HaDeshan. Anyway, getting back now, we had three different limudim, right? We learned our first limud according to Ula. We learned it out from Lochem. And then we had the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, Lechaper. And then we had Rabbi Yochanan, who? Why do we need three different limudim for the same thing? So Tlat HaKroi Lama Libedam, that pasuk has three different words, each one of which means that this is unique. Why are we meaning? That takes us back to the Mishnah. Remember that there were four things. One was Mi'ila, and that's the one that we focused on now. And then we had Pigul, and Notar, and Tamei. You never explained to me why there was no Chiv on Dam of Kachim. You told me why, three times you told me, why if it's Kodesh Dam, there's no Mi'ila. You never told me why there's no Pigul, Notar, and Tamei. So indeed, one of these Limudim is to tell me Mi'ila, like you said. But you also need one to tell me Lema'ute Notar. And you need one to be Mamayit from Me'ila, like you just said. And we need one additional to tell me that Tuma does not apply. Yeah, but what happened to Pigul? Pigul doesn't need any kind of Miut. Avo Pigul, lo tzarech kroi. It's obvious that Dam, by definition, can never be Pigul. Let's just remember briefly the dinim of Pigul. Pigul means that something which has a matir, the matir was brought with the machshava of pigul. So let's say if you're being zorik the dam, the zrika of the dam is the matir of the basur of the korban, right? So if while you're bringing the matir, you're thinking, I'm going to eat this meat or bring this meat, li acher zman, chutz l'zmanai, So then the fact that you did that at the time that you were walking with the Matir, Zorek the Matir, being the Kabbal the Matir, then you would be Pigal. But Dom doesn't have a Matir. Dom is the Matir. So where would you have the Machshava about the Dom? You can't have Pigal creating itself. Pigal is always when an Avedas HaMatir acts upon the object of the Pigal, remember? And therefore, since the Dom itself is the Matir, there's no concept of Pigal on Dom, and I don't need a Pusik to tell me there simply is no such thing. So Pigal, Lo Tzarech Kra, because remember the Mishnah that we had in Zvachim, Kol Sheyesh Lo Matirin. If there is a matir, whether that matir is for the achila of the Mizbeach, or that matir is for the achila of the Kohen, or for the achila of the Balaam, it doesn't matter. Bein la Adam, bein la Mizbeach, that can become pigal, and you would be chayev on eating it, bishum pigal. But dam, gufe matirhu. Dam is the matir. So how could you have dam that was pigled? Dom can only be mifagel, but it cannot be pigal itself, and therefore it is irrelevant. Which brings us to a very special moment for no wonder Richie's so tired, he's been practicing all night, ready to go. Hadran alach kol habasar. Wow.
That is a pang.
And let me tell you.
By the way, it's not irrelevant. It's not irrelevant. It's hippopotamus. Non sequitur.
Okay. I didn't catch that. It's a hippopotamus?
Yeah, but only hypothetically.
It's not irrelevant. It's not elephant. It's not hippopotamus.
Help!
Sorry.
Okay. So
in my dotage.
Fankton, give us another Fankton because the elephant's got in the way. Okay, so now we begin a completely new limud. And if anybody was discouraged by the complexities of the perek that we just finished, you can now gather together new strength and tackle a completely new Trevor. You listening? We can start over. There you go. Okay. And we can start over with a brand new issue. So let's introduce our brand new issue. As you know, we have a concept called Tum'at Ochlim. And as Richie led us through those dinim of Tumah V'Taira in Seder Tyrus, which he was so excited about, and we learned all of the halachas of the concept of Tumas Eichlin, the din of Tumas Eichlin has in it a couple of unique issues. First of all, it has a unique shiur. In order for Ochlim to be metame something else, it has to be the size of an egg. It has to be a kibetza. The question of whether it needs a shiur to be mekabel tuma is a machlokas, and there's stiras in Rashi and different mesechet, whether the din of a kabbalas tuma on any shiur, as opposed to giving off tuma only with a kibetza, the din of a kibetza that we have about kabbalas tuma, question about whether maybe that is the way that the Rabbanan said it, or maybe there's even a concept of a kibetza midiraisa, and even in kabbalas tuma, that's a question we'll talk about. But a nevela is a regular source of tuma like anything else, and over there it is a regular shear. The Torah said the basar of an nevela is metame, and that is the shear of a kizayit. The same basar that is osur is to eat is the basar that is metame you, in the event that you would touch it or carry it. So that's one major difference. There's another fascinating difference that our Mishnah focuses on, and that's the concept of shomer and yad. So you'll recall that the idea of a shomer is that when you have a piece of something that is food and there's something attached to it, which is protective of it. So it has a shell, let's say, and that shell protects the food that's inside. Then the shell is considered to be part of the foodstuff itself, both in terms of tsiruf, so that it becomes added, its volume becomes added to the volume of the kibetza. So even though there's only a tiny amount of, let's say, nut meat, and you don't have a kibetza of nut meat, but if you combine it with the shell, you do. So then the shell is added to the shear, and it is going to be mitameh. That's one din. There's also another din. That's called shomer. So shomer is like the food itself. So obviously it doesn't protect the food from tumah. That's the whole point. If you touch the outside shell, the inside will become tameh, because a shomer not only transmits tumah, but it's also mitztaref. There's another concept of something which transmits tumah, but it is not itself considered to be the equivalent of the foodstuff, and therefore it isn't added to the volume. And that is called a yad. So a yad is something that is usable in moving another thing, but it doesn't protect another thing. So let's say you have a twig that's sticking out that you can pick up the apple with. Now that could transmit tumah to the apple or from the apple to some water, but it will not make the apple bigger. And if the apple was not a good size apple to be the shear of a kibetza, then it will not be metame, because it simply is lacking in the shear. So those are the essential things that we need to know. Those dinim, which apply for tumas ochling, do not apply to the tumas that are themselves sources of tumah. And therefore, there's no such thing as a yad to an avela. There's no such thing as a shomer of an avela that's added to the shear of an avela. The way to say that points to another difference between them. The way to say that is that there's a concept of yad v'shomer on tum'ah kala, on light tumah. But there's no din of yad v'shomer, counterintuitively, to tumah chamura, to heavy tumah. Now that points, of course, to another very important difference. And that is, tumat ochlin is limited to being a low-level tumah. That's a tumah kala. It can only actually be metame, ochlin, and mashkin. It makes no difference if a person would touch tumah kala. If he touches something which is tomei only as ochlin or mashkin, makes no difference if a kli of some kind, a glass or a dish, comes in to touch the tumah kala, it will not affect it, because tumah kala is unable to be metame adam vekelim. It can only be metame ochlin umashkin. So if we have those dinim in mind, we can begin our new perek. And first, we're going to be talking about the things that are mitztaref, and they are therefore clearly shomrim. They are mitztaref with the foodstuff itself because they're shomrim. So we're going to learn things. Let's say you have a bone that has some amount of moach. It's got marrow. So it's a marrow bone, but it doesn't have a whole kibetza of marrow. But if I add the bone itself to the marrow, which is edible and is metame like the nevela. So if I have that, it's not going to help the nevela be metame, but it's food, and it will help food to be metame by adding the bone stuff around it, the actual bone. So therefore, the Mishnah is going to be listing things which may not have a shear on their own, but they can be mitztaref to the shear. Some things because they're shomrim, and some things because they are edible together with the main food, even though you would never eat them just on their own. So if they are present, look, you're not going to sit and make a meal out of congealed gravy, right? Blech. But if you've got some congealed gravy on a piece of steak, and you put the whole thing in a sandwich, then the congealed gravy is going to be eaten with gusto together with the steak. So because of that, it's mitzarif, not because it's a shomer, but because it's edible when it's all put together. So those two categories of things that would be eaten along with the meat itself, or things that protect the food itself, those things are added to the actual shiur of the kibetza. So therefore, ha'or, so we're talking about kosher skin. You've got less than a kibetza of meat, but you have some skin on that meat, and that is a shomer, because obviously the whole point of hide is to be protective of the meat that's underneath. So because of that, it's included in, as we're going to say at the end, mitzarfim letamik tumes ochlin. So the first thing is the skin itself. The gravy, that's what I just talked to you about. If you've got a bunch of congealed gravy, you're not going to eat it. But if it's together with the meat, you will eat it. Halal. So there is a machlokas in the Gemara about what the halal is. Let's take the simplest explanation because it's easy to see it in the Mishnah that way. And that's the way Rish Lakish explains the halal. And he says what it is, it's little shavings of meat that remain behind, attached to the hide, while the animal is skinned. And if you will bring them all together and combine them with other food, they would be edible. So depending on how we define halal, we'll see why it is that they're mitztarif. The bones itself, if it's a marrow bone, will be mitztarif with the marrow because it's a shomer. The gidim, now gidim is a very broad term, as we've seen before. So gidim, you can use the word gid for, let's say, the sciatic nerve. We use it for gid. But a gid would include any type of a ligament, any type of tendon, any type of blood vessel, whether it's a vein or whether it's an artery. All of those things are included in the general term of gidim. And even though you won't actually eat a gid all on its own, but you certainly will eat a tough piece of steak that contains a piece of gid in it, and you chew on that, and that is part of the steak, and therefore it would be mitztarif. Hakarnayim, now horn is not edible, but there is the place in which the horn connects all the way on the bottom at its root. If you cut horn there, it actually bleeds. And that part of the horn is soft enough to be mitztarif with meat because you don't necessarily pull every last piece out of the meat, and it's edible together with the meat, and therefore it would be mitztarif. And the same thing would be true about hooves that are up close to the bone, and therefore there too, that's at least the way Rambam understands it. And if it's at that spot where it would bleed if it were cut, that's considered to be at least mitzarifable. You can add it to the actual meat. Others learn that, which is the way Rashi understands it, that hooves are protective, and therefore they're considered to be a shomer. Any of these things are actually mitztarif to the shiur itself, and they are mitztarfim letamei tumat ochlim avlo tumat nevelot. So as we said before, this idea of a shomer being an actual piece of the food, it's all very nice if we're talking about food. But if we're talking about the Tumah of Nevelot and Tumah Chamura, where the Torah specifies, as we'll see, that it has to be the actual Nivlata, which means the decayed flesh, which would not include any of these things, which are not Nivlata, and therefore they would not be Mitztarif, even if they are perfectly good Shomer. Now, there's another case like this in which something could be tamei tumas ochlin and not tumat nivelot. And where would that be? Well, there's a similar case, kayotze bo. Now, this is one of the most fascinating halachas in all of Shas. Is there a concept of shechita on a non-kosher animal. Now, that seems on the surface to be ridiculous. We're going to shecht a piggy, and what? What is that shechting a piggy going to do? Aha. Turns out that there is such a concept, a crazy concept, which applies specifically to the din of Tumas Ochlin and not to Tumas Nevela. So now, if I shecht a piggy, and the animal is still alive, looking at the fact that it still is being mefarcheset. So it's still convulsing, and it's not dead. Let's talk about a kosher animal. If I do shechita on a kosher animal, it is food, even if it's alive. And at that point, it becomes roi for tumas ochlin. It's kosher l'achila. There's no more din of Avram and Achai on it, as we've spoken about many times. So what about if I shecht a non-kosher animal? Would I make it non-Avram and Achai, even if it's still alive? No, because there's no concept of shechita on a non-kosher animal. But how about if I shecht the piggy for a non-Jew? And then he's not allowed to eat it yet if it's still mefarcheset, because it's still alive. And I can't take off the iser of Avram and Achai, but is it considered to be food since I already did an act of shechita, which is the indication of food when it comes to a kosher animal? What would be the difference if you can't eat it? The difference is if it touched something which would be metame it as food, then, even before it became the din of nevela, because it was still alive, it would carry tumas ochlin on it up until such time as it actually died. And then, of course, its tumas ochlin would be subsumed in the tumas nevelas. So that is the single case where shechting a non-kosher animal is considered to be a shechita. As long as it's shechted by a Jew, and as long as it's shechted for a non-Jew who would be able to eat it in the end when it does actually die. So, kayotzebo, ha-shochet behemat me'ah, lovet kochavim. So there you go. You shecht this little piggy, and it's still alive. It's mefarcheset. It cannot be metame as a nevela, because it's still alive, and the shechita didn't change that. But it will be mekabel tumas ochlin. And therefore, if it touches something that is metame, and then some liquid comes in touch with it, it will transfer that tumat ochlin until the point that it dies and becomes an avela. It will be able to transfer that. Of course, once it dies, it's already a source of tumah. There, it's irrelevant. But there is a fascinating case. So as long as it's being mefarcheset, it cannot be metame tumas nevelas, but it is metame tumas ochlin. So here we have a similar case in which something is more chomer for tumas ochlin, such as the shomer would be for the shear of the tumas ochlin and not for the tumah chamura of the nevelas. Here too, the shechita is considered to be a meaningful act when it comes to the tumas ochlin, avolotum at nevelot, until it actually dies, or until you turn it into a living dead. And what is that? Well, we said the case before. Osa ogistra. If you chop off its head, it's dead, even though it's still convulsing. So those were the cases we said before, that they're metame, so to speak, nevela michayim. Even though they're evincing signs of life, we consider that to be the equivalent of muscle convulsion that is not indicative of life. The way the Gemara puts it is, it's like a lizard tail. Only the cat is fooled about the lizard tail being alive, but not the Yisroel Chachamim Mechukamim who are learning Masechet Chulin. They understand that Pirchus is lav dafka, life. Which means that essentially, the Torah has been marbe tuma when it comes to tumas ochlin by adding the concept of shomer mima shariba latame tumas avelos above and beyond what it introduced for tumas avelos itself, which we will see from the Pasuk where the Torah was Riba. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't agree with everything that you say. There's one thing that I disagree with. And that is, you spoke about the Elal, and you said that the Elal is going to be Metame Tubas Ochlin, but it won't be Metame Tubas Nevelas. But I don't think that that is necessarily the case. If I had a Elal where I had actually skinned a Nevela, and then I have all these little pieces that are attached to the skin, if I take all of those small shreds that are attached to the skin, gather them together, and I have a kizayit b'makom echad, then it would be the equivalent of achila or of actual carrying the nevela or negia b'nevela, and I would be chayev to, if I went into the Beis Hamikdash, I'd be chayev kores. So even though elal is usually part of the skin, but if you took it all together, it would actually be metame tumas nevelas. And you guys made it sound like there's no way that it could be metame tumas nevelas. Okay. Now, in this Mishnah, we are essentially taking for granted the din that we've learned in the Braita. Namely, Tanina lahada tana rabbana. This Mishnah formalizes a halacha that was mentioned in the Braita as follows. Shomrim letumakala. There is a halacha of shomer, which just means it can be added to the shear and not only transmit tuma, only for tuma kala. But there's no concept of shomer, lo shomrim letuma chamura. There's no such thing when it comes to tumas nevelas, which is chamura because it is metame adam vekelim, as opposed to tuma kala of tumas erchlin umashkin, which cannot be metame adam vekelim. There is, counterintuitively, a bigger chumrah in the tumah kala. There are shomrim to be mitztarif to the shear for tumah kala, and no shomrim to be mitztarif to the shear for the tumah nevelas itself. How do we know this? Well, shomrim le tumah kala minola. Where does the din of shomrim come out? Because you said riba, which means that the Torah is marba, additional tumah for tumas eichlin. Show me where that's true. Shomrim letumakala, I can learn it from the Braita of Rabbi Yishmael. The Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, when the Torah talks about the concept of the Hechsher Zroy. So that comes in the context of the Dinim of Shmonish Ratz. It says over there, V'chi yipol min nivlatam, dig this language, because it is so redundant. I'll call Zera Zerua Asher Yizarea. What? It's trying to say that if any of these shratzim, the dead shratzim, fall on foodstuff, it's going to be metame the food. So it takes, okay, I understand you want to take seeds as an example of foods. Okay. So say, V'chipom nivlasam al Zera. But instead, it goes to town. Hakol zera zerua asher yizarea. I mean, like, what does that even mean? Any seeds that you would put in the ground to sow, I mean, that's what a seed is, isn't it? The point is, people plant differently than they eat. If you're going to be eating something, obviously, you remove the husks and inedible material first, right? So if the Torah would have said, V'chi yipol min nivlatam al ha'ochel, so I would have said, okay, that means something that is prepared for eating. Now that it says, on any seeds that you would take out in that state to plant, oh, well, when I take out seeds to plant, I certainly do not remove the endosperm from the seed. That's the whole point. I put it in together even with the husk. And therefore, it's telling me that the shear of the food includes the way in which it would be planted. And therefore, if it's got a covering to that seed, you would put that covering in with the seed. Then that is considered to be part of the seed. And therefore, it teaches us with a beautiful diak, Kiderech Shibnei Adam Motzi'in Lizriah. It's the way people take things out to put in the ground, not to eat. So if you're taking out a wheat, you take out the wheat in the husk of the wheat, the chitapakli pata. You're planting barley. You don't plant pearl barley. You plant barley in the husk. So ora beklipata. You're planting lentils. It's adashim beklipata. Now, obviously, you can't eat those klipot. It doesn't matter. They are part of the shir of kiyipomini vlatam, and that teaches us the wonderful din of shomer. And how do I know that that is simply not the case when it comes to the nevela itself? V'lo shomrim latumah hamura minala. How do we know not to apply that concept as a general concept of extension of a foodstuff, in which case the basar of the nevela would also be extended by having, let's say, bone on top of marrow? No. To Tana Rabbanan, that I know from the following braita. Since the pasuk stresses specifically that it has to be hanogea benivlata, so it's a v'chiyamut min ha-beima asher hilachem la-ochlal, hanogea benivlata yitma ad ha-arab. Not hanogea ba, hanogea benivlata. Now think about what that means. Nivlata means the decayed, the naval, the part that was previously edible and now is disgusting. Now it's become a nevela. So that means only the actual nevela. That's why it stresses again. Benivlata. Veloba, or not including touching it by touching its hide, that's not nivlata, unless you'd say, well, if it has a kezias basar, so then perhaps I could be metame through the skin. That may be. We'll talk about that tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, when we get to the next daf. But lo ba'or she'en alav kizayit basar. If there's not a kizayit, you cannot add the skin that's protecting whatever nevela there is. It's not added to the shear of the kizayit. So we basically understand why the Mishnah said riba. The Torah was marba more when it came to tumakala than it was marba for tumachamura. Oh boy, did we have amazing things today. Absolutely. So we've learned all of these basic differences between the Tumah Kala and the Tumah Chamura, Tumas Eichlin and Tumas Nevelas. We've reviewed the Dinim of Shemrim. We're going to get to the Dinim of Yad tomorrow. And then that was in our new parak, just in our new parak. And then before we learned specifically differences of Dam, special Dinim, that there are four issues that don't apply to Dam. Mi'ila, Pigo, Noiser, Vitame are specifically ruled out by the Torah when it comes to Dam, or they just can't happen, like Pigo. They can't happen to Dam. And therefore, even though Kol Chela v'Kol Dam are compared, they're not actually the same. And then we learned out which parts of an animal are actually considered to be chelev vis-a-vis the dinim of the iser of achila and vis-a-vis the dinim of being put on the mizbeach. Turned out that we have two completely different ribuyim because we needed to learn out that all parts that are put on the mizbeach of kachim kalim, even things that are not themselves chelev, let's say klayot or diaphragms, those are all considered also to be kachi Hashem, and therefore they are included in Me'ila and Pigol and Neisser and Tameh. Gosh, what a full day it's been. Richie is in absolute ecstasy. All right, everyone, we had a wonderful chock full of different kinds of chalev, piggy meat, and all kinds of stuff like that, because that was the craziest part. We had the din. If anybody asks you, can you do shechita on a pig? The answer, unbelievably, is yes. That is a great kind of tricky question for your kids on the Shabbos table. So leaving you with all of that fun information, Bezrat Hashem, see you all if the Lord, as good old Mr. Bornstein would say, if the good Lord spares us, Bezrat Hashem, we should be zeichet to learn again tomorrow. Kol tov. Have a wonderful day and Besorot Tovot.